There's a new Frankenstein on the block. On the 7th of November, Netflix released a new movie called Frankenstein from Oscar-winning director Guillermo del Toro.
Some of what I will tell you is fact. Some is not. But it is all true. What manner of devil made him? In seeking life, I created death.
Now, the Netflix release is the latest in over a century of screen adaptations of Mary Shelley's 1818 novel. The first Frankenstein movie was actually a 12-minute silent film released in 1910. The Netflix version, by contrast, clocks in at about 2.5 hours. One question that I wasn't expecting people to be asking in the wake of this new release of the old story is whether Frankenstein is science fiction or science fact. But that is the admittedly tongue-in-cheek title of a recent talk at the University of Aberdeen. The talk was given by Dr. Catherine Harkup, who's a former chemist turned science communicator, and also the author of the book Making the Monster, the Science of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And I'm very pleased to say that Catherine joins us now on Sunday Extra. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, the genesis of Mary Shelley's novel Frankenstein is famously a sort of late night, very high literary, scary storytelling session. And Shelley was only 20 when the book was first published. How much of what was contemporary science at the time did Mary Shelley actually know?
I think she knew an awful lot. She had a very conventional and unconventional education for the time. So it's conventional in that she did not go to school. This was par for the course for women in the early 19th century. But she had a father who was a very prominent figure, and he was visited by scientists, politicians, philosophers, artists, and they would sit in his room and discuss topics of the day. And science was a big topic of the day. And Mary Shelley would hide behind the sofa and listen to these conversations. So I think she was extraordinarily well-versed in what was going on at the time. Her husband, wasn't her husband when she wrote this book, but Percy Shelley was very interested in science. He was fascinated by electricity. He'd built his own electrical devices and all sorts. So yeah, she had lots of sources of information around her. She was also a copious reader. So yeah, as women go, I think she was pretty well informed for the day.
I'm assuming that the basic premise of the novel doesn't qualify even then as science fact. But when you wrote about the science of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, what particular science were you referring to?
The science of the day was, so this is the Enlightenment period, the tail end of the Enlightenment period, and it was an extraordinary era in science. Discoveries were being made all of the time. So the main topics of the day were chemistry. Lots of new elements were being discovered. Electricity. This is the days of Franklin flying his kite and attracting bolts of lightning to the key. It was also, the hot topic was anatomy, the study of anatomy. And there were lots of anatomy schools in London where Mary Shelley was living. So all of these kind of combined. So this kind of the science of the era, so many new discoveries were being made. People thought they were perhaps on the verge of discovering the secret of life because there were such rapid advances. So this is not necessarily science fact or science fiction. It's the science that could be round the corner. This is the scary or opportunistic or fantastical possibilities that science seemed to be offering up at the time.
It's interesting even that we use the term science and scientist. Was the term scientist in common usage at Shelley's time?
No, it hadn't been invented at the time. So the word scientist, we use it you know, it's the obvious word. So if you study science, you are a scientist. If you study art or you practice art, you are an artist. But at the time, you would be called a natural philosopher, and you were just interested in the philosophy of everything. There was also very few hard defined categories. Like, people weren't biologists or chemists, they were natural philosophers. You could be a poet and a scientist at the same time, and no one would pass comment on this. It was just par for the course. Now I think things are much more pigeonholed and segregated, and scientists aren't expected to be interested, say, in art or literature, and artists aren't necessarily expected to be interested in science. But of course, there's massive crossover.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Dr. Catherine Harkup, author of the book Making the Monster, The Science of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in Light of the New Frankenstein Movie out on Netflix. And Catherine, you mentioned that anatomy schools were very common in London in Mary Shelley's time, and the accumulation of anatomical parts is a particularly gruesome aspect of the story itself. Is it possible to say how much people who might not necessarily have been attending those anatomy schools would have been aware of those sort of practices at the time?
Oh, very much aware. Very much aware, because there was a problem in the UK, particularly at the time. Because anatomy was such an important subject to be studied, and the best way to study anatomy was through dissection of bodies. If you're going to be a surgeon, I want you to know what the inside of a human body looks like. I don't want you mistaking a kidney for a liver. You need to know where stuff is and what it feels like, etc. So dissection is the way to learn. But there simply weren't enough bodies to supply all of the anatomy students. So this was very much the time of the resurrectionists, as they were called, or grave robbers. So gangs of people would stake out graveyards looking for freshly dug graves. And on the darkest nights, teams of people would dig up fresh bodies and sell them to anatomy schools for fantastic sums. So people were well aware that this happened, and they took measures to protect their recently deceased loved ones. They would put tokens on graves. If you go to Scotland and London and various parts around the UK, you will see old graves with like cages over them. This is not to keep the zombies in. This is to keep the grave robbers out and to protect and keep their loved ones where they should be in their eternal rest. So this was a well-known thing amongst the general population that, yes, anatomy students went around graves. Maybe not anatomy students themselves, but, you know, maybe the ones who are a bit short of cash to pay for their tuition would go around graveyards and dig up bodies to fund themselves.
And we've discussed this, I suppose, at the general level of sort of popular awareness. Is there any evidence that this is something that Mary Shelley was specifically aware of, or reason to think that she would be aware of it?
This is a woman who, for her relaxation, to escape the stresses of her home, and it was quite a stressful home life, she would sit on her mother's grave. So her mother died 10 days after she was born. So she never met her mother. This is Mary Shelley is the embodiment of the Gothic. She learnt to read and write by tracing the letters on her mother's gravestone. So part of her visiting this grave would have been, of course, respect for the dead and to say your proper goodbyes and maintain that link to your family. But also it would have been an awareness of grave robbers, especially in the initial days after the death. And this would have become a tradition for her, I'm sure.
I've seen you describe the novel Frankenstein as a deliberate mix of credible science for the time and fiction. But could you perhaps talk us through how the credible science for the time plays out in the novel?
The credible science for the time is, it's all around Victor Frankenstein. So this is a scientist who goes off to university to study the hot topic of the day, chemistry. And he's such a brilliant student that he soon outpasses all of his professors, and he wants a new intellectual challenge. So he moves on quite naturally to the human body. So this is one of the scientific kind of philosophy shifts at the time, was thinking of everything as a mechanical construction. it had started off with Isaac Newton. You know, the universe, the planet seemed to be organized on a mechanical kind of structure. They obeyed laws. So people extended this to everything. Human beings are complicated, but they could just be very complicated machines. And if you get all the right parts together, that machine should work. So this is kind of a natural extension from chemistry to biology, Victor Frankenstein hitting all the hot topics. And so all of this is kind of fact for the day. Where it goes into fiction is the construction of the creature. There were attempts at cosmetic surgery at the time. Transplants weren't really a thing, but there were certainly dueling scars that needed covering up and noses that went missing. So there was basic plastic surgery and kind of constructing features on a person. But constructing a whole body, that is where we reach into fiction. The idea of some kind of spark of life was also very current. People speculated that because electricity could make muscles twitch and bodies move, that maybe this was the secret of life. So it is quite a natural extension that, okay, if you can control it in the right way in your beautifully constructed creature, you can bring it to life. After that, we are into pure fiction. This is not just a brilliant construction. There's no tissue rejection, nothing like that. This also, we found the secret of life. We have a creature that is physically stronger, more durable, intellectually far superior to his creator. This is a scientific triumph, but it is absolute fiction.
You've also said that this blend of scientific knowledge and fiction writing was something that hadn't really been done before Mary Shelley did it. In what sense do you mean that? Is she the first science fiction author, or are you referring to something else?
She's not the first science fiction author. That's usually attributed to another woman who's writing back in the 16th century. So Mary Shelley is quite late to the game in that respect. However, if you look at science fiction of the time, or if you look at Gothic fiction of the time, and this is Gothic fiction quite clearly, all the Gothic fiction that was contemporary to Mary Shelley, it relies on some kind of supernatural element. There is some mystery, some unknown. And although the details of bringing this creature to life are unknown to the reader, they are known to the character in the novel. And it is attributed to scientific fact. We are not relying on some kind of spell that he's cast or some supernatural goings on. This is science. So in this is a true sense science fiction. Even though it's not possible, it is grounded in what is thought to be possible to this individual.
And we've talked about that mix of science knowledge and fiction writing, I suppose, in retrospect. Was it received that way in the day as well?
It wasn't the science fiction that was horrifying to readers at the time. It was a controversial novel, but it was controversial because of its political kind of subtext, which I think is mostly lost on modern readers, because this is not the world that we are living in. It was said that it espoused Mary Shelley's father's philosophies too strongly, and he was even suspected of being the writer because it was published anonymously. So it was the kind of political side of it. The sort of religious arguments at the time, also, that wasn't really a thing, because although Victor Frankenstein is tampering with the creation of life, he is being a god to this creature, which goes against all the kind of Christian philosophy of the time. He gets his just desserts. He does not succeed. He has a miserable time as a consequence of this. So he gets his just reward. So that on that kind of moral aspect, everyone was fine about it. So I think most people at the time read it not necessarily as science fiction, but as a morality tale. When you do something, when you create something as significant and as important as a life, you take responsibility for it. And it's Victor Frankenstein's lack of responsibility and care for his creature that is his downfall. His science is fantastic.
You referred, I think, somewhat euphemistically earlier to Mary Shelley's stressful home life. Are there other aspects of her life and biography which you discern in the story or the framing of the original Frankenstein tale?
I think it's interesting that not just in Frankenstein, but in all of Mary Shelley's works, women don't do very well. They are minor characters. They suffer significantly. And I think this probably reflects her experiences. There are very few mothers around. And that was her reality. She never knew her mother. She only knew her stepmother, who she did not get along with. Her life was quite chaotic, and she was ostracized from her family for most of her life. She also, her time with Percy Shelley was stressful. There was always a third party with them in the form of her half-sister, Claire Claremont. So there are suspicions now that Percy was having an affair with Claire. And
doesn't seem like a stretch as a theory, does it?
No, it doesn't. It seems quite probable, and how much Mary knew and accepted that, I think, is up for debate. But anyway, so yes, it was stressful. And this kind of anxiety of, there are very few kind of settled people in her novels. And Victor Frankenstein just wanders all over the place, as Mary Shelley did. So there are aspects of her life that do show up in this novel, but not in a very direct way. I still find it incredible that this 19-year-old girl wrote this book. That is extraordinary.
Absolutely. And really getting your head around the cultural impact of this story echoing as it has down the centuries is hard for anyone to get their head around, let alone a teenager in the 1890s. Catherine, it's been fascinating discussing Frankenstein with you. And I see from the titles of some of your other work that what you've done for Frankenstein, you've also done for other works of literature connecting the science to the art. Could you tell us about some of that other work?
So I've looked into the science of the poisons that Agatha Christie used in her novels. Obviously, she is known for her poisoning, and she was brilliant at it. So another great female writer who knew her science and used it extremely well in her written work. I've also looked at All the Ways to Die in a Shakespeare Play. So another brilliant observer of life around them, William Shakespeare was known for his brilliant observations. And this turns up also in all the deaths. And there are many in Shakespeare's plays.
How many deaths did you have to cover to tick off that one? That sounds like a big task.
Oh, God, it's something like 300 named characters across the 37 odd plays and a few poems. So yeah, it's a bloody massacre in quite a few of his works.
What's your favourite Shakespeare death?
My favourite Shakespeare death, the one that always gets me and it will always make me cry, is the death of Falstaff, because it is so real. This is what death is, and it is beautifully described. The most fascinating one for me of the where the hell did this come from? It is probably killed and baked into a pie.
Well, that's a precursor of Sweeney Todd. Well, Catherine, thanks for discussing Frankenstein and your other work with us on Sunday Extra today.
Thank you.
Dr. Catherine Harkup is the author of Making the Monster, The Science of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and the new movie Frankenstein, directed by Guillermo del Toro, is available on Netflix globally.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.